Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is an Anchorage physician, Dr. Lynn Clark. Dr. Lynn Clark is a primary care physician who handles some medical problems we call behavioral health issues, in particular ADD and ADHD. And joining us also in the studio is Lena, an 18-year-old college student, and Daniel is joining us by telephone. Daniel is out of state, and Daniel and Lena are people who know personally what it's like to have problems with ADD and ADHD. So as you guessed, our topic is ADD and ADHD. You can reach us with your questions and comments at any time during the next hour. In Anchorage, our number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And at least for another week, our email address will be line1@ksk.org. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Lena, nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And Daniel, nice to have you on the line.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk with you as well.
All right. And Lynn, we figured this is your third time back.
Yes, sir.
All right. So let's talk. I always start with as much about definitions as I can. So we hear the terms ADD, ADHD. What do those initials stand for? And what do we mean by attention deficit disorder anyway?
ADD is attention deficit disorder. ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And the reason that we talk about them in two separate terms is that some people struggle primarily with inattention and distractibility. They're not classically hyperactive or impulsive. Other people are extremely physically restless or have very poor impulse control, either blurting things out verbally or reacting without stopping and thinking.
These are called disorders. They're not usually referred to as diseases. I think of them as spectrum problems. What am I saying? What's important to recognize about ADD and ADHD?
There is a very wide range of how the symptoms present themselves. Can be very subtle inattention. Kids who are selectively attentive appear to be able to concentrate on topics or activities of interest or fun or excitement, but not less monotonous, repetitive, boring things like spelling and math. And they may be overlooked in the classroom because they're not causing disruption. They're not getting up out of their seat. They're not impulsively smacking kids as they walk by other desks.
I think one of the arguments, I remember a psychologist who wrote, I don't remember his name, an article in the paper, the Daily News, said at one time argued there was no such thing as ADD. And the English for a long time, Great Britain, the United Kingdom, did not recognize those as disorders. So, there is this semantic issue of what's a disease, what's a disorder, and what's just variation from normal. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get at in a sense, too. We're all different in our ability to attend, and there are certain factors that may help us attend better. Is that fair to say?
It is very fair to say, and in preparation for this program, I was doing a little research about cultural differences in how people view attention or management of attention. And the interesting thing is, among all cultures, there can be an anti-psychiatry anti-medication bias. And some people just believe it is deliberate misbehavior, that people are perfectly aware of what they're doing and they ought to be able to control it. And that's one of the frustrating things about attention, especially for people who have poor impulse control. They can tell you exactly what the rule is, but they can't stop and think before they break the rule. So when this happens repeatedly, it looks quite intentional. And this is hard for parents who live with children with the condition to get past, because it's so frustrating to have the same kinds of behavior happen over and over and over. You can't understand why a person wouldn't learn.
We're now learning a lot more about the brain and how the brain is put together and how the brain functions. Is that helping us understand a physiologic basis to attention in general?
Well, it helps me understand, and people who are able to think in medical / psychiatric terms. But there is a definite genetic component. You often see people from generation to generation in the same family with the same kinds of symptoms. Mm-hmm. I had one family that came to me and said that the grandpa told us he was spanked every day for the first 3 years in school mm-hmm. because he couldn't stay in his seat, couldn't keep his mouth shut, mm-hmm. couldn't get his work done.
Despite getting spanked every day.
Despite being spanked every day, exactly.
Right, right.
The brain is like a battery, and there's chemicals that cause electrical impulses that cause our brains to work. Mm-hmm. And in the case of attention, the chemicals are primarily norepinephrine and dopamine, the neurotransmitters. And what research has shown is that there's plenty of these neurotransmitters, but they're not getting from neuron to neuron, especially in the right frontal part, the most sophisticated part of our brain in terms of executive function, being the boss of me.
Making decisions,
getting started, sticking with it, planning, organizing, knowing how you're doing, getting finished, being able to stop.
Recognizing consequences.
Right. Mm-hmm. Remember. Mm-hmm. Remembering. Mm-hmm. Well, memory is often the first thing that falls apart when you can't pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty of these neurotransmitters, but they're not moving from brain cell to brain cell. And that is where medication works, provides a bridge, allows these neurotransmitters to circulate among the brain cells mm-hmm. for a few hours a day.
Okay. Well, Lena, you and Dan, let me try to bring you in at this point, if you don't mind. And Lena, you're the female, so I'm going to start with you. How does this strike you? What is your understanding of this? Does this make sense to you? Do you feel that you have some attentional problems? How do you recognize that and so forth?
I think that I do have some attentional problems. I've had this for as long as I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in elementary school, middle school, high school, the youth academy, it's always been like this. I will start a project and I don't have enough attention to finish it. Something will always distract me mm-hmm. from completing a project. And I think another reason is all the distractions as being a teenage girl contribute to that too.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always noticed it is so much harder for me than any other girls or boys that I see that for concentrating. It's just been like that as long as I can remember.
So even, especially in a classroom or even in a classroom, is a classroom harder or easier than, let's say, at home in a situation where you can control some of the distractions?
It's harder, especially in a classroom. But like at work, I get distracted at social events, I'll get distracted. It's just a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of, and again, I think I don't have the greatest attention, but I got enough attention to get through mm-hmm. medical school, and I learned some ways to cope with my distractibility. I was a person who could not go to the library in college, like 90% of people, and sit there because I would do anything but study. So I'm thinking that people with attentional problems in the classroom have that even in spades as they're talking about. So I'm just using this as an example. I'm asking you, does this make sense? Does this strike you as being similar? That a teacher says you're talking about Shakespeare and you're reading about Shakespeare and Falstaff and you think, well, Falstaff was a beer that used to be in Texas. And so you're kind of jumping from, and so you have a hard time staying with the thought process that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you're distracted by not only the words that are going on, by what's going on outside, how other people are doing things in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Can you overcome that? Can you, are there ways you can control that?
I think there are, but it takes a lot more effort than any other person who doesn't have ADD should.
It's all time consuming.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Daniel, let's bring you in. What are your thoughts on this subject?
Well, I guess going to the point of when I first realized that I, you know, that I may have ADD or ADHD, I think the first time I cognitively recognized it was when I was in middle school. That's when I started to have, from my memory, the most, I guess, behavioral issues, when I was constantly getting in trouble with teachers. I think fortunately never got into serious trouble, but I had, you know, problems, you know, fidgeting, talking too much, blurting things out. And that's also when I noticed kind of a lot of the inability to pay attention, the jumping from topic to topic in my mind. Mm-hmm. But looking back, really, it probably was something that started even earlier than that, and I just kind of was oblivious to it. Mm-hmm. So
does it affect your grades, both Lena and you? Did it impact on your ability to get good grades or grades that you think you were capable of getting?
I think for myself, I would definitely say there was a correlation there. I mean, just the inability to pay attention, whether it be in class or especially when it came, for me, came time to read or, you know, focus on solving problems alone or in the classroom, it was very difficult to get past that. And if you can't experience the learning through the solving of problems, I think that can inhibit your learning. And I saw myself over time with deteriorating grades definitely throughout at least junior high and high school.
I use an example when I talk to patients about ADD that my family will laugh at if they're listening, is I can't sing. When I sing, people roll down and laugh so hard they can't stand up. And so I don't sing. You know, it's not too difficult for me. I just don't sing. But if you're having trouble competing in a classroom and you are required to go to a classroom and compete and it's difficult for you, it would seem to me you would act out, not go to school, maybe color your hair, you know, maybe try to take medications or drugs that make you feel better. Has that kind of experience rung true to you, Lena, or to you, Daniel, in any way? Is just going to school at times painful if you don't feel like you can be successful?
For me, I tried to, when I was in high school, I had such a bad attention problem, and I would try to avoid going to school. I would try to get out of my classes, walk around the halls.
Mm-hmm. You didn't like to sing in front of everybody, huh?
No.
Okay. So, yeah, so I mean, my point is, nobody likes to not be successful. Mm-hmm. And so one of the strategies here is to try to make school successful.
Mm-hmm. Make it fun.
Make it fun. Yeah. Daniel, I'm sorry, Lena, go ahead.
Another thing, I was really successful in the youth academy because you don't have a choice. They push you and push you and push you. And that's how I succeeded.
So you had structure.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And and the decisions were made for you.
Yeah.
I guess. No? Daniel, your experiences?
I didn't have a highly structured high school experience, but I did have a good family system that kept me structured. And I was also, looking back, it was fun at the time, but it was really fortunate to be involved. I was involved in both music and in sports. And those, I think, forced me to, you know, stay on track more and just, if nothing else, kept me busy. I think that kind of structure that they provided and the just generally more organized day that they provided really, I think, in the end, helped me a lot. In addition to just, I think exercise helps me to this day stay mm-hmm. concentrated. So it's kind mm-hmm. of an unknowing but a good side effect.
Okay. Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to the Line 1 Your Health Connection. Our topic today is ADD, ADHD. Dr. Lynn Clark is an expert on these subjects, and she's with us as well as two young adults who have had problems with ADD. And if you got questions or comment, our local number, 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1, and you have to spell that out, line1@kska.org. Let me also keep along the same line by going over a question that came to me just before the program, and it says, Lynn, I'm going to address this to you. Could you please discuss what resources are available for the parent of a 15-year-old boy heading into high school with ADD? He has managed to get through 8 grades with average success, but is steadily losing interest in school despite great test scores and above average intelligence. Would you recommend Adderall? Any information would be appreciated. I choose this because, to me, that's almost the prototypical thing. We see this problem perhaps a little bit more often in boys. They're, at least they come, I'm going to put it, attention easier. Maybe it's not more common, but they come to attention more. And they are often fairly smart, but are struggling and not academically being successful. And therefore, as we've discussed earlier, begin to lose interest in school.
I think this goes straight to the point that Lena made, that it is astronomically difficult and exhausting to force yourself to concentrate when it doesn't come easily. Mm-hmm. And that eventually anyone of any age begins to kind of give up. I call it kind of a learned helplessness. I've tried this before, it didn't work. I'm not even going to waste my time and energy. Sure. And I do think that this mom is wise to anticipate that this trend of increasing frustration, decreasing effort, yo-yoing of grades, which is largely dependent upon whether you get the assignment done and turned in or not, will likely get worse because there's way more demands in high school than in middle school. Mm-hmm. And often the kids are of average to above average intelligence, which adds to the parents' frustration because you know your child is capable.
Okay. What other suggestions would you have for her at this point, though?
Well, I don't want to talk about any specific medication because the whole class of medications that are most commonly used to treat attention deficits are called stimulants. Mm-hmm. And they are stimulants in the sense of caffeine. Mm-hmm. They're not speed, they don't make people get high, but they do stimulate the brain by allowing this neurotransmitter connection that I talked about before. There's no doubt the medications are most quickly and most obviously effective, but they aren't the only mm-hmm. approach. What I don't like to see happen is for parents to become deeply more and more intensely involved in monitoring and supervising their children, their adolescents especially. This is very contrary to normal development and can lead to a lot of, it can damage the parent-child relationship. So you need a team, and it can be a private tutor. In some parts of the country, they have ADD coaches. It can be structure, as Lena found helpful. Mm-hmm. Sometimes individual counselors can work with people on, especially perhaps things like controlling impulses and being able to anticipate consequences of behavior. Mm-hmm. You can ask for specific accommodations at school. They may or may not be granted. There has to be a reason for that. Mm-hmm. But it needs to be a team approach with the parents kind of as the team leader, but not directly involved in nagging or supervising.
So one of the most important bits of advice I guess we would want to give this parent is to, be sure we got the right diagnosis. We have not discussed the problems with diagnosis and other existing issues that can confound the treatment. We haven't even gone there yet, which is not uncommon. But get the right diagnosis and work with someone who's experienced enough to help you go through the best options for your individual situation. And remember that it's not going to get easier in high school if you got ADD, ADHD. Right. It is going to get more demanding.
Right.
Okay. All right. We've got a couple of callers. We've got one caller and an email. Let's take a phone call right now. Bill, you're on line one.
Yeah, good show. Thanks. I would like to hear you sing someday. I don't think it'd be bad.
You got a long way ahead of you, dude.
But, you know, think about it this way, though. If you enjoyed the effect that you had, would you sing more?
Enjoyed the effect I had? No. I mean, it's painful.
No, I mean, if you enjoyed that pain that you inflicted on, would you sing more? Well, this is my point.
I'm not that kind of guy.
But this is my point. It's like when I think I have ADHD, and I like to find out where there's a test you could or get a diagnosis.
Yeah.
But the thing is I always look for things that make me feel good.
Right.
And if I have something that makes me feel good, I'll do it. Okay, so if I couldn't sing and enjoyed the pain, I'd do it more. See what I'm saying? The example I always heard was you can never remember where your car's parked when you come out of the mall. Okay, but if you sit there in front of your car and say, this is the best parking spot I've ever had, you come out and you go right to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got a feeling that you can associate with the logic in your brain.
Gotcha.
Okay,
yeah.
See what I'm saying? So in other words, it's just a different thing. And then the other question I had about besides the test, if there is one, have you had any experience with small doses, 5 milligrams, of naltrexone?
Okay. All right. Well, I haven't, but Lynn may have. So let's let Lynn, Dr. Clark, answer your questions.
There is no specific test for ADD. There are brain scans that are done in research centers, but it's not practical for every person who thinks they might have an attention deficit to go for a brain scan. There are psychologists that will administer continuous performance tests. There's a whole slew of them over the years. I think the most recent version is the TOVA, Test of Variables of Attention. Those are not universally accepted among other psychologists or physicians as a definitive diagnostic tool. So basically, we depend on what's called a diagnostic interview and gathering as much information from as many people as possible, parents, teachers in particular for kids. It's a little trickier with adults if you're the sole historian. I've never read or heard of naltrexone being used for ADD. Naltrexone is a drug that is used to treat alcoholics and drug addicts because it interrupts their craving for these substances.
That's at 50 milligrams a day, usually where it's prescribed.
Yeah, no, I have never heard of naltrexone.
5 milligrams a day.
No.
I take it myself, and I've been off it and on it for 3 years, and everybody around me says, have you been taking your naltrexone? And I go, no. I said, well, you better start taking it again. So it seems to work for me, and I'm happy about it, and I'll just get off there.
Does it work on the dopamine system, since that's one of the pleasure issues, or anybody?
It's like eating chocolate.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for your comments. You were going to say something else about Bill's comments.
Oh. Bill was talking about doing things because it's fun, and then he gave that really good example of how to remember where your car is parked. But in general, I want to reiterate that people who have trouble with attention have trouble with what we call selective attention. They can focus on things that are fun, enjoyable, rewarding, exciting, which is by their definition, not by our definition, but not on other more mundane, monotonous, and repetitive things.
We are already about halfway through the program. I think this is a point where I'd like to go ahead and take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk some more about what it's like to have ADHD, ADD, and ADHD, and also what are some of the other options for treatment, and take any phone calls and emails. So let me remind you, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection, and Anchorage, our number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@kska.org. After this short break, we'll be right back with you on Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcast of Line 1, Your Health Connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is Anchorage physician Dr. Lynn Clark, who's a specialist in ADD and ADHD, and Lena and Daniel, two young adults who are have been diagnosed with ADD or ADHD and have been helping us understand a little bit about personally what it's like on the other side, not just how physicians view it, but what it's like to live with these these problems. So if you have comments or questions, you've got about 30 minutes or so to give us a call or drop us an email. Our email address is line1@kska.org. Our phone number is 550-8433. We also have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And please remember, this is the live broadcast today between 7 and 8 on Monday nights. If you're listening, it's a taped rebroadcast. Daniel, I'm going to go to you, and then I'm going to ask Lena. I'd like your approach to handling your attentional issues as you've noticed. What have you tried? What works for you? Daniel, you've already talked about, both of you, a little bit about how structure helps. What other things, including medications or other attempts you've made, including things that you tried that somebody said, hey, this is the best thing that's ever happened that didn't work? I'd like to know about things that didn't seem to work as well.
For me, you know, I think the number one thing in my life has been exercise. It's really served, obviously it has benefits overall, but with ADD, it really has served to focus, especially when I was starting to get erratic or feel like that the distractibility was edging up. Probably the second best thing would be just planning, and that's a very long-term solution for me. It's been something I've struggled with a long time, but it really, when I've set out plans and focused on realistic expectations and daily lists and things like that, they've really helped to keep me on track because it gives me something to look at, something to keep along with.
It sounds like you write those down in some way. Those are hard copied to something. It's not something you hold in your head.
Yes. Okay. And through some research on my own recently, I've kind of discovered the best ways to do that for myself. Used to try to make big long lists, for instance, and I would kind of get lost in them, you know, 20 things that I need to do in the next week or so. And it's really worked out to make it more simple. What do I need to do today? What do I need to do this afternoon? Also finding the appropriate place to be. You had mentioned at the beginning of the program, going to the library was terrible for you. I found actually that the library helped when I was in school, but now oftentimes just getting out of my apartment or getting out of a normal familiar scene and getting to a coffee shop or a quiet area like that really helps me to be in the right situation.
Okay. All right. Lena?
I agree with Daniel. He was talking about keeping lists, and that's what I've been doing lately, and just trying to stay organized.
Mm-hmm. Do you take any medications, either one of you?
I'm taking Strattera right now. it takes a while to actually start working, so I haven't noticed anything yet.
Have you taken any of the stimulant medications in the past?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Daniel?
I actually have not taken any medication. I do use coffee quite often. I found that that helps. I think it's a less pronounced and obviously not a prescribed method, but it really does, especially, you know, as almost just as much as a chemical, it's also just something to be there to keep me focused, remember in a way that, hey, I'm supposed to work now, I'm drinking my coffee.
Right. Yeah, I would just editorialize and just say a lot of medications, antibiotics, medications for heart disease, caffeine and caffeine derivatives for lung disease, because they also open up airways and help you breathe better, plus they're a little bit of a diuretic. Many, many, many of the most important medicines that we've used in the history of medicine have been derived from natural products and improved upon in the fact that they are more effective and with less side effects. So that's not an uncommon thing to hear. And Lynn, I guess I would ask you to verify that people who seem to note that they can calm themselves down and maybe think more clearly and not forget to do things if they take caffeine is an important hint.
No, I think it has the same effects on the brain, although perhaps, as Daniel said, not as pronounced as stimulant medications. And so I think it's a very valid approach. The problem with caffeine is there are potential side effects, too. Stomach aches, irritability, sleeplessness, jitteriness. So it's a self-limited substance.
Well, since we're on this a little bit talking about the medications a little bit, I'd like to bring up this issue that I've heard a lot recently, and that is that the stimulant medications in particular are probably the most commonly abused drugs in college now. Lynn, do you think that's true? And if so, why might it be true?
Well, I think it is true. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think it's also a huge problem in high school. Mm-hmm. To a certain extent, I wouldn't use the word abuse. It's not necessarily that people are using these medications to get high, but they are what we call diverted. Here, take this, it'll help you study for your final tomorrow. Here, take this, it'll help you finish your term paper. And some kids will take advantage of that and sell the medication to a person who wants. And I've heard the going rate, actually this is some years ago, the going rate is $15 per capsule of Adderall, which it's terrible. You make quite a profit off a 30-day prescription. But in that sense, it's maybe not so different than you and I might have used no-dose in college. Again, caffeine. There's not a lot new in medications. What's happening is a lot of medications that have been around for many, many years, in fact decades, are being reformulated as extended release once a daily preparations, or Strattera is a variation of an older antidepressant medication, but it's only marketed for ADD. There's an older medicine called guanfacine that we know as 10X is now redistributed as a once-a-daily Intuniv for treatment of, again, specifically for treatment of ADD. So there's not a lot of new revolutionary stuff going on in medicine.
And to be marketed, at least they have to be shown to be effective than a placebo. They have to be effective than something that's not addressing anything in any way we know, and must be relatively safe. I mean, those are the two criteria.
Right. The Federal Drug Administration sets up these criteria for a medication to be.
Do people without obvious attentional or, let's say, significant attentional disorders improve their attention when they take stimulant medication?
Yes and no. I've had parents who were so concerned about giving their child medication that they sacrificed themselves to the first dose. And some will come back and say, I got the house clean. And others would say, I waited all day for something to happen and nothing happened. one of the issues about these medications in college students, again, is they do have a reputation for performance enhancement. So that, yes, even though you don't have a diagnosis of attention deficit disorder, maybe if you use Adderall or Concerta or Focalin, your performance will improve. Instead of B's and B pluses, you'll get A's.
Lena, before we came on the air, you had expressed to me your interest in perhaps going into the area of law enforcement. You're studying criminal justice. And Dr. Clark, before the program, wanted to make sure that we address the issue of does the diagnosis of ADD have an impact on your job selection? And I've had an email that has come up with the same kind of question. Have you experienced, are you concerned about that yourself, Lena?
I am very concerned about that. Criminal justice is basically my dream. I'm really interested in the entire subject, and it comes easy to me. When I was taking justice classes, it was easier to like pay attention. I don't know how to explain it, but yeah, it does concern me because certain fields of study disqualify you if you have ADD or ADHD, and I've asked around, but I've never really gotten a direct answer.
Daniel, the same question.
I've never run into that myself. I work in real estate, and it's on the private side, and it really is something that I think I've never faced because I've never been on medication. But I think it's something that concerns me. Definitely moving forward, the thought about potentially taking medication is affected by that. I do wonder, though, if it's, you know, it would almost be a form of discrimination to do that. But those are my thoughts on it, really.
Sure. Lynn, your comments. You wanted to talk about this.
Well, as my clientele have grown up, I am encountering situations with young adults not as certainly having to have documentation from me at least as to when they were diagnosed and how long they were under my care and what they were prescribed. And for certain careers, especially for pilots and air traffic controllers, the FAA strictly disqualifies them both for the ADHD diagnosis and or having been on medications. I get a lot of questions from young people trying to enlist in the military. And as you go up the career scale in the military for young officers, I think it's, again, a very serious, potentially disqualifying condition and or treatment. And as Lena was the first one to bring it to my attention about law enforcement, and then the question also comes up about firefighters, any of the emergency medical technicians and so forth.
All right. Let's take on one of the phone calls that we have. We've got a couple. I want to try to get through those. John, you're on line one.
Yes. I think partially when I was in school, first grade, I end up flunking it, and then next year I got kicked out of school, and in second grade I had, and then when I got to fourth grade, it seems to me that I was in a sensitive principal's office all the time. When I got into fifth grade, it became less and less and less, and as I got older, it became less, and I didn't get sent to the principal's office anymore. And then when I got to high school, I would take algebra and I get an F, and then next time around a D, and then finally I got an A to my surprise, which told me that, well, I am capable of learning it. And I don't know, it seems to me that, I don't know if you can get partially, and it seems, I don't know if you can grow out of it, but it becomes less and less until finally I realize, before I talk, I have to stop and say to myself, okay, first engage your brain, and then say whatever you're going to say. I don't know, it seems like to me, I don't know.
Excellent points. First of all, I think it brings up the point that there are serious consequences of not getting treatment for ADD, both socially and academically. And then I think the second point is that although I don't think people necessarily outgrow ADD, the brain certainly continues to develop. And these all of these executive functions, including attention, improve very rapidly, starting about 15 to 17, and then continuing on into the 20s. So I think that, yes, you have certainly learned some strategies to help yourself. And there was a third point you brought up, and I can't remember.
Well, learning abilities. I figured that if I went to school or took a class again and then again, finally my third time around, I had enough attention paid the first and second time, and the third time around, I go, oh, I get it now.
Well, yeah, good practice makes perfect. And I know the point I was going to make is that as people mature and get older, the hyperactivity and the impulsivity seem to kind of recede into the background. So your behavior wasn't so blatantly disruptive and you weren't getting in trouble, but inattention and perhaps a more subjective sense of restlessness certainly can persist.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank
John,
you.
Thanks for your call. Judy, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi, thank you so much for doing this program. It's so important. I am a teacher, and so I'm one of these people that fills out the paperwork and watches the children and am very chagrined to recommend a child get tested for ADHD. And my reasoning is if I can, as their educator, help them learn to make accommodations themselves, then as they grow older, like these two wonderful young people you have on your program, as they grow older, they do find what works for them. And what concerns me is I have so many, I teach sixth grade, I have so many sixth graders, and I will have the first conference and the parents will say, oh, well, you know, they're on the very highest dose of whatever possible, depending on the doctor's diagnosis. And I think, wow, do they really need this much medication just because it makes going to school easier? It's just a grave concern to me. Do you guys see this? Is there any, am I the only one worried about all this?
No, I worry about it too, Judy. And may I thank you for
for
providing information about the students. You can't possibly underestimate how important it is to hear from other people about these kids.
Oh, yeah. I understand that.
I think the problem is that since there isn't any surefire diagnostic test for ADD, sometimes we say, well, you know, it looks like a horse, it walks like a horse, let's treat it, let's call it ADD and treat it. But really it's a zebra. And the zebra could be anxiety, could be a learning disability, it could be more of what we call oppositional defiant disorder or conduct disorder. Some of these kids that I'm saying forgive them, they know not what they do. They could actually know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
So it becomes a diagnostic challenge, and continued feedback from school is ever so important in sorting those things out.
And is there any trend of going away from as much medication of ADD and ADHD, particularly ADHD children?
Well, if I am prescribing and I hear from the teacher or from the teacher via the parents that this maximum dose of medication is not working, I'm going to start looking for other diagnoses, other treatments.
And how long would you keep a child on a maximum dose?
Well, the stimulants work very quickly. And so when you see improvement, you see it almost instantly once the proper dose is identified. So even after a month, if there's absolutely no improvement, or certainly if side effects start to emerge, if the kid's mood gets worse, then I'm scratching my head and starting to look around.
Okay. Well, thank you for what you guys are doing. We love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's important to recognize that not only can these other diagnoses be different, but they can also exist at the same time. And so there are, in my experience, and again, I'm asking for your comment, Lynn, there are, I'm thinking of one right now that I recently started on some medication, and the family was ecstatic. The kid is ecstatic. The grades have gone through the roof. I mean, they just, everything has turned around very quickly in a very relatively young, early, well, I don't remember what grade she's in, fourth, fifth year, was struggling before, and now is getting all A's and happy with school and everything. So there are situations where it makes a big difference, and it's very hard to achieve that kind of success as quickly and as rapidly and as consistently without medications as well. So it's
absolutely
what we want to, I think we need to hear is that the diagnosis can be difficult, so the medications may not work in that situation. And the alternative approaches are somewhat successful and can be successful, but are time consuming and expensive, and you may waste a lot of time finding out they're not going to work.
Right. And in the meantime, you risk the frustration and the declining self-esteem and perhaps deterioration in parent-child relationship mm-hmm. that's going on.
Okay.
I think there's absolutely nothing more gratifying than seeing a child like you describe
right.
respond to medication
right.
and improve. But I swear the longer I do this, those types seem to come fewer and farther between. There's
yeah.
way more other stuff
right.
going on.
Right. Yeah, and it may be true to say that that physicians are no different than anybody else. We get caught up in success, and one of the reasons antibiotics are overused is they're so successful. And so we have these very successful situations, and we're trying to make other people as successful the same way. Let's take another call. Adam, you're on line one. What can we do for you? Adam, you still with us?
I'm with you. Do you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
Okay, great. I'm a teacher, and I have ADD, and I've been where your previous caller was before, sitting in IEP meetings or sitting in the decision post of having to recommend a kid. And it wasn't until it was there was a specialist who came to talk to my school and listed out all the symptoms that went along with an ADD kid. And I went up to her after and said, "That's me to a T." And I'm an advocate of medicating when you need it, and certainly for my life, it helped a lot in kind of the early stages of it. And as you know, I was medicated with Adderall for I think 5 years. I took that, and then you know once I really view it as a stepping stone to organizing the rest of your life and starting to become more responsive instead of reactive to the things that, you know, run you around like a racehorse. And I guess I'm a person who's been, you know, in the age of when parents said, "Oh no, I don't want a label on my kids. I'm going to keep them, mm-hmm. you know, safe and everything." And I don't want them to have that stigma as they go through life of having ADD. Well, forget about the stigma. It is so, so important to have these kids have a positive self-esteem and not walk around beating themselves up for the fact that when somebody says focus or just study or be responsible, God,
I think
the teacher, because I hear it all the time from all these parents waving their hands, and I say to them, it's like, well, the analogy the person used for me was, it's like you need a pair of glasses, but you tell the person, just look harder if you can't see it without
yeah, glasses. I great points. Again, you're bringing up several really relevant points, and it's, you know, a lot of times when people dispute the validity of an ADD diagnosis, you know, I'll say, what do you call it? Well, they're just lazy, or they're just unmotivated, and it becomes very hurtful. I agree with you. I had a new client recently whose father, like you, took medication for a couple of years, and he said the exact same thing, that it allowed him to focus long enough to develop some skills upon which he now functions quite well. The problem is you're talking from an adult, mature brain perspective, and kids can't necessarily develop those skills that quickly. And in the meantime, whether they're diagnosed or not, they are being labeled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, from a teacher's perspective, I see that our student population, I'm a high school teacher, is way underdiagnosed in terms of how many kids show signs of the ADD kind of behavior and how many kids self-medicate. The
yes.
amount of kids right. that drink
yes.
you know,
yes.
these Red Bull right. drinks and all these other things and do better when they're drinking all these stimulants. I mean,
right.
I mean, there's a demand right now for, you know, backyard Ritalin or whatever and other things because it helps them focus and stop feeling like, you know, they just can't pay attention.
Right.
I think one of the issues that as a society we need to kind of come to terms with is, hey, for whatever reason, society's changing faster than our brains are. And in the old days, an ADD-er would do great at going out and hunting and doing, you know, all the other kind of, you know, hard physical labor or things that you needed a quick responsive behavior for. But nowadays where you have to sit still or and it really argues the case for why, you know, computers and video game digital kind of, you know, attraction is making it so hard to educate students in the old fashioned way. It totally changed how I educated after I started watching how stupid it was for me to be teaching in this, you know, old fashioned, hey, focus on this book, just study just because. It's a real eye opener, and I appreciate you guys doing the show here today, and I think the more people who are aware of what's, you know, kind of in an undercurrent in our society, the better.
Yeah. Couple of comments again that I'd like to make is this problem has always been around. I don't think there's any question about it. And as you mentioned, Adam, it's only been in the last, 150 years we've really demanded that people sit still in a classroom for a long period of time. It's much, much too fast for things to have changed dramatically. It's just that we're picking out people who have this more difficulty with attention, of which it's a huge spectrum. So when we sit in here and talk about ADD, we're talking about lots of different apples and oranges because of lots of complications, complicating factors, not the least of which we've already talked about, is what we're learning about the brain and its development and how the maturation of the brain and actually the myelinization of the frontal lobes is really what's really going on in adolescence. So as you buy some time through adolescence getting into adulthood, you're not the same person you were before anyway. Lena, I want to bring you back in. You're interested. You're one of the youngest. What do you think about the conversation up to now? Has this been helpful for you? Is it frustrating to you? Does it make sense to you?
Yeah, actually the calls that we've gotten have been really helpful. I didn't really like talking about this.
Sure.
ADD, because I don't like to be labeled.
Yep.
And I don't want it to affect anything in the future, so I just right. kind of try to hide it away.
Yep.
But like,
well, it's not that uncommon. What is it? Mm-hmm. We didn't go into that. Something like 10% of the population.
Well, they're still quoting 3 to 7.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yep.
All right. But 1 in 20. It's
yeah.
a fair.
It's
to
a
have enough attentional issues that it causes some difficulty.
That's right.
In school.
Yep.
Go ahead, Lena. I'm sorry.
It's fine. And I didn't like, but how his teacher said that if you need glasses and then someone says read harder. Yeah, basically. I didn't wanna. I was kind of skeptical about taking pills
yep.
because how it disqualifies for the FAA and the military. But
right.
there's nothing I can do about it. So
yeah. Have you thought that Strattera has? You said I think you said you just started this relatively early. Can you tell if that makes a difference more than high doses of caffeine, for example?
Well, actually, I mix them. Uh-huh. I have a Red Bull every day.
Yeah.
So
okay, because.
Just because, yeah. I love drinking caffeine.
Well, so. Yeah, but you love drinking caffeine because you think it affects how your mind works, how you can think clear or not. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm just thinking that that's what we've been talking about, that that's why you like caffeine, but maybe
yeah,
that's not true.
But actually, yeah, I have noticed that caffeine works a little bit, but I've just been waiting for these pills to start.
Okay, so you're just starting with Daniel. What are your comments to this point?
On just the medication side, or
free thought, whatever you want to say.
Okay. Well, you know, for me, I think one of the the point about the glasses and you know, using proper techniques, I think, is a huge part of that, you know, beyond medication. To me, I really think just knowing some of the characteristics. Like I said before, I've been reading some of the literature on ADD and ADHD, and just looking through some of the questions in the self-exams and things like that, it's just like, wow, I do, you know, find myself getting often distracted. That's a simple one, but there's lots of more poignant questions that these tests just ask out of the blue, and you realize, wow, that is something that I thought that was just me. That was me, Daniel. That's not me having ADD. And when you realize that, it's easier to deal with it, even without medication. And it also gives you the ability to try new techniques, things that I may have given up on in the past because I figured out I'm just not good at this or I'm not good at that. So I think one of the huge things is, beyond just medication, is the diagnosis itself and realizing that this exists and what the symptoms are and what you can do to improve on that helps in itself.
And is it worth saying, we just got a minute and a half or so left, that Lena had brought up that her interest level in something also helps her attention. Is that an appropriate coping mechanism as well? Is, you know, if I'm a teacher and this kid likes baseball and has an attentional problem, why can't he do his report on Mickey Mantle or Warren Spahn or some famous baseball player? Would that help him finish the task and complete it more effectively? Is that an appropriate strategy, Lynn?
Yes, it is. And also, it's part of why things seem to get better for adults, is that as adults, we have a whole lot more say-so in what we do.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if you can't sit still, please don't go to law school. And don't go. Don't become an accountant. Find a career that allows you movement.
Okay. We've got two people holding, and I don't know that we're going to have time in the last minute or so. I want to kind of wrap things up. I apologize to those that listeners that called in and we're not going to be able to get to, but I want to make some final comments. Lynn, what are your final thoughts? What do we want people to take away today?
I want people to be able to be objective and not emotional about their children's or their students' behavior. And to be careful about using judgmental, harsh words such as lazy, unmotivated, bad. I think that's my overarching goal in what I try to do, is to lend objectivity.
So we still need to be open-minded and educated. There's a lot more to understand. Physicians are not out there to just give everybody medication. They do have a broader perspective a lot of times than all the individuals, and we hate to see our kids on medication, and we hate to take medications as people, but sometimes it's helpful.
Well said.
Is that fair?
Yep.
All right. Lena, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us. Daniel, thanks for joining us from Denver.
Thank you.
Next week, we're going to return when Kelly Donnelly, the executive director of the Stone Soup Group, will be with me. And you can join us June 20th at 2 p.m. for the next edition. Actually, it's going to be 2 weeks if I didn't say that. I won't be here next week. And we'll be talking about the Stone Soup Group and what this statewide nonprofit does to provide support and assistance for parents raising children with youth who have disabilities and special health care needs. Pat Yak is vice president of public media. Kristen Spack engineered today's program. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.